So this week's parsha is, or parshiot, are Acherimot and Kiddushim. And we will be fixated with the first pasuk. We'll get further, but we'll also go backwards, which for some of you can be very frustrating, because I know you just want to go forwards. V'deber Hashem Moshe Acherimot Shnei V'nei Aaron B'karvatam L'fnei Hashem Bayamutu. So for those of you who don't know what's following, you don't know what's going to happen next, next is going to be a description of what we call the avodah, the service for Yom Kippur. So if you were to follow through the beginning of this chapter, actually most of this chapter, compare it with the Mishnayot in Masechet Yoma, and compare that to the various avodah that we say on Yom Kippur, you'll see the similarities and also some of the difficulties. There's one verse which is out of sequence, and therefore there's a difference between the way it's written in the Psukim versus the way that we find it in the Mishnah. Leaving that aside, it's the introduction which is interesting. And I've already said this many times, that generally in the book of Vayikra, we don't have time references. We have laws, but there's not time references. There's only two time references. Sorry, I take that back. There are a couple of time references, but you have to pay careful attention. There's only two narratives. Of the two narratives, one is given a time reference, and that's by Yom HaShmini. So that means this is after Yom HaShmini. Actually, I can't even say that with great... It could be the same day. It could be literally the same day. This is what he said afterwards. You know, the same way that we like to assume that the instruction not to drink, right, not to become intoxicated when you do avodah, was said right afterwards. We don't know if it was said right afterwards. No, it's written right afterwards. So the fact that it's written right afterwards then causes people to make the suggestion that maybe that was the problem, that they were intoxicated when they did the avodah. The other problem then, when we get to this verse, is, okay, so what exactly are Tazri and Metzora doing here in the middle if this is after they died? So the larger question then becomes, so what exactly is the relationship between the deaths of Nadav Avihu and what we're reading over here? And for our purposes, I don't know if we're going to answer this, but what we will do is we will try to go both backwards and forwards. What we're going to try to do is understand is how did the deaths of Nadav and Avihu impact upon the laws that we have over here, and then we're going to go the other way as well, and we're going to try to figure out how do the laws over here help us understand what happened with Nadav and Avihu. So I think that we can end up going both ways because of the relationship which is stated here in the beginning. So again, V'deber Hashem Moshe, Acherei Mot Shnei V'nei Aaron, B'kravatam L'fnei Hashem V'yamutu. So, big krav v'tam l'fnei Hashem v'yamutu is a good description. They came close. But it's interesting, because it could have said other things. It could have said that they brought an esh zara. It could have said, as I said, there are many things that it could have said when it describes their death over here, but what it says, big krav v'tam l'fnei Hashem v'yamutu. V'yom amar Hashem Moshe, daber al Aaron achicha, v'al yavo b'chol eit el hakodesh. One cannot come to the holy place at every given time. And I don't know if you realize, but we just now bumped into a problem. And the problem is one which is debated. The debate is, where exactly did Nadav and Avihu bring their ktoret, or the Esh Zara that they brought, where was that? Jesus, if you were to take out a map of the Mishkan, don't tell me the Mishkan, because then you'll be in trouble. Where in the Mishkan was this? Was this in an outer, inner Kodesh HaKadoshim? Where did they go when they did this? So now, when I read this so far, there sounds to be some kind of a location, right, as the issue. Bikravatam lufnei Hashem. And then it says, Daber va'al yavo, but now there's a second issue being immediately introduced, bichol eit. This is not something that could be done at any given time. And by the way, that raises then another question, which is debated as well. Let's just say that the Jewish people, for whatever reason, decide that Yom Kippur is a good couple months away and we need another Yom Kippur. We need to ask for forgiveness. So I know that you can fast, you can do this, you can do that, right? Could the Jewish people collectively then say, we need a Yom Kippur right now, send the Kohen Gadol, everybody fast, send the Kohen Gadol in, do whatever Avodah, do the Seir LaShem, the Seir LaZel, can you do this whenever you want? So this is something which is discussed by the Ramban, it's discussed by the Vilna Gaon. Is it something that maybe in the Mishkan they could have done, maybe in Beit HaMikdash they couldn't have done? But I'm saying that that is a point we should discuss. But over here it says, you can't come Bichol Eit, so does that therefore say only one time? At the very end of the section, it will tell us a couple, will make two different verses, will make reference to Yom Kippur. And say, no, on the 10th day of the 7th month, that's the day that this should be done. So again, the question will become, is that the day which is obligatory, or is that the only day that it could be done? But you notice right again, you cannot do this at any time. So maybe that just gave us information in terms of Nadva Vihu. Maybe the thing which they did, right, taking the Ketoret, maybe the taking the Ketoret, and again, when we read about the deaths of Nadva Vihu in Parshat Shmini, we at that moment did not have any reason to compare it to the Avodat Yom Kippurim because we didn't have the Avodat Yom Kippurim. But now the fact that the Avodat Yom Kippurim is being introduced with a referent, and that is, that's the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, that's what causes us now to pause and say, okay, so what exactly is this telling us? So we have Bekarvatam Lefnei Hashem, Al Yuvo Bechol Eit, which is a time issue, El HaKodesh Mibeit LeParochet, El Pnei HaKaparet Sh'al Aron V'lo Yamut, Ki Ba'anan Irel HaKaparet, which is the only way you can go in there is with an Anan. So now, again, it went to location, and the location over here is the inner, the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Pasuk Gimel, Bizot Yavo al Aaron al Kodesh, now creating yet another clarification and qualification. This is how you come in. Bipar ben Bakar lechatat va'ayil la'ola. So certain offerings need to be brought before you can go there. And then it adds another issue in terms of clothing. Ketonet bad kodesh yilbashu mechnasei bad yu al besaro vavnet bad yachkor uvitznefet bad yitznof. Big day kodesh hein v'rachatz b'mayim et b'saro u'leveshan. That you need to go to the mikveh, and you need to prepare to put on these clothing. You need to put on these clothing and go in. Which means, if you just not paid attention, we just got a whole bunch of instructions regarding time and place and clothing and all kinds of things that could be done. And I then ask myself, okay, so now how does all this compare to what happened to Nadav and Avihu? And by the way, I can now give an answer that what was the problem? Well, the problem is to say that there's one problem. It sounds like there can be multiple problems over here. That it has to do with the place that you go, the preparation that you need, the korban that you need, the clothing that you need, the date that you need, and they sort of messed up. So I'm saying, although, what's interesting is, but this wasn't taught yet. So if this wasn't taught yet, by the way, don't be so sure about that. This wasn't taught yet, but if this wasn't taught yet, so then I can say that all this is a reaction to Nadav and Avihu. Oh, look what Nadav and Avihu did, and now the Torah says, no, you can't do this, but this, if this is going to be done, now this is the way and the time and the place and the manner, fashion, that this can be done. Going to, again, the main part, which will more clearly connect it for us, because we do know that what Nadav and Avihu did, and if you want for a moment, just look back on source 2. V'yichu b'nei Aaron Nadav Avihu, ish machtachto, v'inu b'ham esh, v'yasimu alei ketoret. So they took fire, and they put the ketoret on top of it. V'yakrivu l'fnei Hashem esh zara asher lo tziva otam. And they brought a strange fire which God had not commanded, and so on. Going back to the first source in Arsh Achremot, by Pasuk Yudbet, v'lakach melo machteh, you're going to take the machtah gachalei esh, so you're going to sort of take a pan, and that pan you're going to fill with burning coals, fire. Me'al ha-mizbeach, you're going to take the fire from the mizbeach, milufnei Hashem, umalo chofnov ketoret, and in your other hand, I have to stress that right now, in your other hand you're going to take the ketoret, the incense, samim daka, very, very fine, ve'vim mi'beit le'parochet, and you're going to bring it in into the other side of the curtain, v'natana taktoret ala esh lefnei Hashem, and you'll put the ktoret on the fire in front of God, v'kisa anana ktoret, and then the cloud will fill up the place with the cloud being formed by the burning incense, et zakaporet, will fill up the area, asher aledut v'lo yamut, and you do it this way, and then you won't die. So again, v'lo yamut, you won't die, it seems to go back to the very first pasuk, "Acharei mot shnei bnei Aaron b'kavam fnei Hashem v'yamutu." This is the way to do it, v'lo yamut. So the reason why, of course, why we're focusing on this is because this is the Ketoret. So we understand that the avod of Yom Kippurim has many, many elements to it. And you can say that for you personally, the most exciting part is the Seir, L'Seir LaHashem, and the Goral and all this. But this seems to be the main issue of going into the Kodesh Hakodashim. And this is really what the main avoda is. And we pay attention at the main avoda. It has within it the Ketoret. And it's specifically the Ketoret, which is what Nadav and Avihu did. And therefore, once again, this whole section is introduced by saying, don't do what Nadav Avihu did and died. Rather, do it this way, and therefore you won't die. So we have many, many qualifications, but at least you understand why I am still stuck with Nadav and Avihu, because you can't get away from them being the way that this whole section is introduced. Regarding our question of where it was that Nadav and Avihu brought their Ketoret, let's take a look at source number 3, which is the Sforno. Ve'yichu b'nei Aaron, and this is commenting on Perek Yud, ish machdakto, chashvu shekamo she'achar ha'tamid, asher bo tishra shechina, kamru, olot tamid ledorotechem, petach ha'omod lefnei Hashem, asher yiva'ed lachem shama, tavo ktoret, kath haye ra'ui lahaktir ktoret chadasha ata, al hagalut kvod Hashem al kol ha'am v'ayirida ta'esh ulechein hikrivu. He just now constructed a defense of Nadav and Avihu as to why this was a pretty good time to bring the Ketoret. And what he's referencing, and remember I said before that, maybe Yom Kippur was mentioned before in the Torah? So I'm going to read a pasuk, and you're going to tell me that this pasuk was never there before. You're going to tell me that the last, whatever it is, 50 times you looked and say for Shemot it was not there, and somebody just now snuck it in, and you're going to go home and you're going to look if it's in your Chumash at home or not. Okay, look at source number 4, because this is what the Sforno is making reference to. And then we're going to get to the main part of the Sforno, which is where this happened. But first, take a look. Don't say what he's saying. Read the Chumash now. He's not going that far. Read the Chumash, source number 4. Perek Lamed and Shmot. V'natata oto lefnei aparochet, asher al arona idud, lefnei akaparot, asher al edut, asher yiva'ed lecha shama. Now you realize that's what he's quoting. V'hikter alav aharon, ktoret samim, Baboker, baboker, beitiva watani rot yaktirenu. So that after the candles are lit, then the Ketoret is brought. Uvalot Aharon, and therefore he's claiming that they, after the candles are lit, there's some kind of giloy shechina. So therefore, after there was a giloy shechina here on that eighth day, they said, the response to the giloy shechina is that I need to bring the Ketoret. Uvalot Aharon etanei rot bein harbaim yaktirenu Ketoret. And also when they're lit in the evening, a Ketoret should be brought. Tamid lefnei Hashem ledotechem. Lo ta'alu alav Ketoret zara. By the way, have you noticed that before? Don't bring a Ketoret zara. And you say, hold it. We know somebody who brought a Ketoret zara, but this can't be referring to the same thing, because this is Shemot. V'lo ta'alu alav Ketoret zara va'olam mencha v'nesach lo tizchu alav v'chiper Aaron al-kar nartav echat b'shana midam chatat ha-kipurim echat b'shana yichaper alav l'dorotechem kodesh kodeshim hu la'ashem. Yeah. Is that interesting how that pasuk was never there before? But do you notice that something is very interesting here? A Ketoret being brought, a daily Ketoret, but don't bring a Ketoret zara. But there is, once a year, a special Ketoret Kippurim, which is being brought. Yeah? This was never there before, because... And now you realize the Sforno told you, go look there, because that's what they were thinking. So they were obviously thinking, this is the special, special day. So whatever, they're in a Ketoret mode. I'm just going to stop. I want to read the end of the Sforno back in Source 3. Lifnei Hashem, what does it mean when it says that Nadav and Avihu brought this in front of God? B'mizbeach ha'pnimi. They brought it in the inner Mizbeach, which means not the outer Mizbeach. Shenem abo lo ta'alu alav Ketoret zara. Going back to that same pasuk. Meaning, they did what the Torah said not to do. The gam im hayu ra'oi lasot kach, and even if it was worthwhile to do this, or proper to do this, im hayu mitzuvim b'zeh, chatu lasot ata. The mistake was doing it now, at this particular time. So I want to point this out now, just to get this clear. There's actually, and we'll see this in a moment, three different possibilities, at least, as to where they brought their Ketoret. One is outside. Everything was taking place outside in what we can call the Machane Levia, or on the outside. Another possibility is they did this inside. Another possibility is they did this by the Kodesh HaKodashim, which again, for our reference in terms of Yom Kippurim, would be the most interesting. What is a Ketoret Zara, which they're told not to bring? So Rashi writes in Source 5, again commenting on Perek Lamed and Shmot, Ketoret Zara, Shum Ketoret Shel Nedava, Kulan Zarot Lo Chutz Mizu. What did Rashi say? You can never donate a personal Ketoret. The Ketoret always has to be a national Ketoret. It has to be something from the Tzibur and can never be from the individual. So what is a Ketoret Zara? A Ketoret Zara will be one which was brought by an individual. That, by definition, makes it Ketoret Zara, which Rashi doesn't tie it together with another Avihu. We'll see in a moment the Chizkuni does, but that itself is interesting. The Ramban offers a second interpretation, taken from the Targum Onkelos. Look at the Ramban, Source 6, the end of the line. He quotes Rashi, then writes, Aval Onkelos Amar, Ketoret Bosmim Nuchra'in. What makes it Ketoret Zara? If you add different ingredients. V'lo Targum Nuchra'a Rotzeh Lefaresh Shelo Yaseh Ketoret Misamim Acherim Zulatei Ketoret Asher Yitzava Otam. So a Ketoret Zara is using different ingredients. If you add extra ingredients as well, then you've broken this. So Rashi understood Ketoret Zara is one of an individual. The Ramban understood, based on Onkelos, that it's something which is different in terms of the content of that particular Torah. The Chizkuni writes, Ketoret Zara, Kol Ketoret She'enu Ba Mishel Tzibur, Afilu Hu Ba Mishel Kohen, Hinikrot Ketoret Zara. Anyone which is brought, even by a Kohen, if it's not by the Tzibur, Kishem Sha'asu Nodu Vavihu Shachu Ish Machlato Ulekach Ne'enshu. So here you have now another interpretation as to why they were punished, because they brought a Ketoret Zara. How in the world do you know not to bring the Ketoret Zara? Because it says, don't bring a Ketoret Zara. I mean, how much more black and white do you want it to be? And on top of that, what we find particularly intriguing is right after this we're told, next pasuk, right back in Source 4, Lo Talu Lo Ketoret Zara, and the next box says, V'chipera Anol Kanotov Achat B'Shana, Chatata Kippurim, Achat B'Shana, Yichapera Lo Dorotechem Kadoshim Hu L'Hashem, and we're left somewhat befuddled. What are we looking at right here? Here you have Ketoret Zara, and here Yom Kippurim, and it seems to be, no pun intended, but the various ingredients are just staring at us over here, of not just the sin, but also the response to the sin of Yom Kippurim. So Yom Kippurim is already here. Don't do a Ketoret Zara, but rather only Yom Kippurim has a particular type of service that could be done, and therefore the Acharei Molech Shel Ben Aaron now may not be the first time this is taught. It may be now coming back and saying, oh, listen, you know, we've been here already. Now, just one more second. This leads us then to a larger question, and that is, and which is debated among the Tanoim already. What exactly did Nadav Avihu do which was wrong, or maybe I'll put that a little different, what exactly did Nadav Avihu do which was punishable? The question is, what did they do which was a punishable act? And that we'll find various opinions. Continue. Source number 8. We're going to see number 8, a fuller description of it, hopefully, a little bit later. But right now, a little snippet from this. It's the Gemara in Erev and Daf Samach Gimel, Bahatanya. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Lo Meitu Bnei Aaron, Ad Shehor Halacha B'Pnei Moshe Rabban. The only reason they died, I'm emphasizing this, not because of anything that you thought. The only reason they died is because they ruled in front of Moshe, which means this is a totally issue of respect and not an issue of anything else. It's not content, it's not, I mean, of what they said. There's nothing wrong what they did. Actually, this Gemara is insisting they did nothing wrong. They were right in what they did. They were right. My Darish, what was their insight, which means where did they get it from, what they decided to do? And now it brings a different pasuk. The pasuk, before I read it, we'll look at Source 9, so you can see it inside. This is the beginning of Vayikra. V'shachad et ben abakar lefnei Hashem, v'ikrivu bnei Aaron hakohenim et adam v'zakor et adam. So you see, bnei Aaron have a job within the korbanot. right? Lizrok et adam al mizbeach saviv asher petach ha'omoid v'hivshit et ha'ola v'nitach ota l'nitachea v'natnu b'nei Aaron ha'kohen ish al mizbeach v'archu etzim al ha'ish. That their job has to do with bringing the fire and putting the fire on the Mizbeach. So over here, when the Gemara in Source 8 says, my Darish, what was it that they thought? Their job is to bring the fire. Amru, afa pisha esha, redim in a shamayim, even though we just now witnessed the fire coming down from heaven, mitzvah lavim in a hedyot, we nonetheless have to bring fire in the natural way, in additional to the supernatural way. So the Gemara over here is insisting that this is not zara. Again, this is very different from what I was saying before from the Sfarno. They were saying, no, what they did was right. Rabbi Lezer says what they did was right. But what was wrong? This is one of the terrible answers that one can ever give to a question, that we're lacking Simon Says. They were right, but Moshe didn't say so. Which means even when you're right, and Moshe's there, and you did it without asking Moshe, you're wrong. Which is they did the right thing. So that and again, that may be a little surprising when we read this Gemara. But let's look at Tosfot. Source 10. My darish, v'nu ben Aaron ha'kohen esh al ha'mizbeach, afal pi she'esh ha'redim in ha'shamayim mitzvah levim in ha'hedyot. Right? That was the citation, quote from the Gemara. L'chor ha'mashma, she'ktorot she'ktir al ha'mizbeach yitzon, hoya. He goes, therefore it seems that where did they do this? They did this on the Mizbeach ha'chitzon. They did this outside. V'horot shah ha'ita kida akash. That they understood that what they're doing now will be similar to the Nisim, which by the way was the same day, and therefore they understood that it should be done outside. In the Gemara by in Menachot. If it were the inside, then the drasha doesn't work. There was no fire coming down automatically in the Mizbeach HaPnimi for the Ketoret, so therefore what Tosfot is saying here is it must have been outside. So Hakayim Elan B'Perek Amalem Abinona, Gemar and Yoma says, the Marachan HaShniya Sha'al Mizbeach HaChitzon L'Ketoret, Miu B'Toret Kohenim Mashma, Shilabed Kodesh HaKadoshim Nichnusu L'Aktir, U'Lasham Nisrufu V'Tzarechiyin. So Tosfot just now gave us three possibilities. He says, one possibility is it was on the outside, another possibility it was in the inside, another possibility was by the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because he says that's what it seems from the Sifra. So now, as I said once again, we are completely confused, but we'll see the Sifra right now, the Torah Kohanim, in Source 11, and we'll see now that there's multiple opinions there. V'yavo Moshe V'Aaron el Ohamoid, Moshe and Aaron came in. Now again, this is Yom HaShmini in the beginning. Why did Moshe and Aaron go inside? Again, they go inside, and then they go outside. Why do they go inside? For what purpose are they going inside the Mishkan? Lama nichnas Moshe v'Aaron biyachad, lilamed Aaron amaseh ktoret, to teach him how to do the ktoret, inside. Oh, lo nichnas elo davar acher, or maybe they went for some other reason. Halama nichnas Moshe, and then at the very end of a back and forth, the Midrash Halacha says, Halama nichnas Moshe im Aaron lelamdeo ma'asek Torah. That seems to be the conclusion. Rabbi Yishmol Omer, Yochel Eish Zara Mamash, maybe they brought really a strange fire. Literally, Talmud Lomar, Shalotzi Va'otam, Hichnisu ha'belo Eitza. They brought it inside without having consulted. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Lochnisu ha'elamin ha'kirayim, only from inside where the sinks were, as it were. Shenemar v'kriv l'fnei Hashem zara. Emkein lama nemar shelo tziva otam, shelo nimlechu b'Moshe Rabban. They did not consult with Moshe, their teacher. Reb Lezer Omer, and this is what we saw from the Gemara, lo nitchayvu ela al shahoru halacha b'bnei Moshe Rabban v'kol amor halacha b'bnei Rebbe Rabbo chayiv mita. So it says, Rabbi Lezer says, no, they were right what they did, but the only thing wrong over here was that they did not get Moshe's go-ahead. A fire came out from the Holy of Holies and burnt their souls.
Shel
that went into their nostrils of each one. The ketoret is something you smell, so the punishment goes into the nostrils. V'techelotam nishmatam nisrafa. And there is a whole issue of the nishama related to smell. That's why you lose the nishama yitera, you use the besamim, and so on. Lamed hei. V'yamutu lefnei Hashem. Rabbi Lezer omer lo metu ela b'chutz. Mokom shelevim mutarim likanes l'sham. Rabbi Lezer, who by the way was a Levi, says, where was it they standing? They were by the machane levia. They were, which means all the way on the outside. Shenemar v'gru v'yasum b'kotnotam. Imkein lamanemar v'imutu lefnei Hashem. Nagfan malach v'dachafam l'chutz v'otziyam. No, and a malach came and pushed them outside. Rabbi Akiva omer lo meitu ella mibifnim. Rabbi Akiva says, no, they died inside. Shenemar v'yamutu lefnei Hashem. Imkein lamanemar v'gru v'yasum b'kotnotam. Melamed shehitilu chanit shel barzel v'garurum v'otziyam l'chutz. Which, by the way, at least in some of your minds, should be similar to the idea of the Kohen Gadol, who messes up on Yom Kippur and then gets dragged out of the Kodesh HaKodashim. And that seems to be what the image that it's trying to present for us over here. So all that I want you to see from this is what may have been very simple to you when we were reading Parashat Shemini. Oh, Nadav Aviyah, they brought an Esh Zerah, they brought Torah, and they died. So suddenly when we're reading it over here, it's not so clear exactly what they did wrong, it's not so clear where they did it, and things are a little bit more complex than we perhaps suspected before. And not only are we worried about Pshat, we're worried about another thing. We're worried about the relationship between the sin of Nadav Avihu and the Kohen Gadol, which means the Chumash told us these things are related. Which means that's where we're really focusing much more on the Torah now, to understand what was it with the Torah. Again, the first fundamental question is, was the behavior that they did was right? We have reason to believe no. What's the reason? The reason to believe no was like we saw before in Rashi. You can't go bring one from a Yachid, by the way. Maybe they didn't see it as a Yachid. Maybe they saw what they were doing as being a Tzibur. Maybe they saw each one of themselves as a Kohen Gadol. Maybe each one saw, I'm doing this for all of Am Yisrael right now. Who said they're doing this? Again, we're not told motivation. But you saw the Chizkuni took that pasuk. Rashi didn't go that far. Rashi says, a Yochid can't do it. And we guessed. Chizkuni said, that's what Nadav and Avihu did wrong. They brought it as Yechidim. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe they brought it as a Tzibur, maybe they didn't bring it as a Tzibur. What else would be the problem? That's how we just started reading it from the beginning. Maybe it was the wrong day, maybe it was the wrong clothing, maybe it was the wrong place, maybe the wrong ingredients. I'm saying there's all kinds of possibilities what it is that they did wrong over here. Now, I want to, I mean, and again, it's fair to say, okay, so why are we going back to Nadav and Avihu? It's almost, of course, we have no choice, but I want to point out one more thing about what they did, and then bring one more reference, which I think is intriguing, and then we'll see where we get to from there. Nadav and Avihu seem to have a particular, not just behavior, but it seems to be an ideology, and this was, I think, hinted at along the way. The only way that we really sense it is when we read Perek Tet carefully, and that's in Source 12. That's the beginning of Shemini. I'm going to read it and focus on a couple of things along the way, which hopefully then will build up an argument. On the eighth day, Moshe calls Aaron and his children. By the way, notice his children. That means that Nadav and Avihu and Elazar and Itamar are summoned as well. That screams out at us, the fact that it's an eagle for a chatat. You notice by Yom Kippur it didn't say eagle, it said par l'chatat, which is a little bit more matured for the chatat there versus the eagle, which may be young and immature. So the introduction over here is interesting because it is quite similar to the Avodah on Yom Kippurim. So here you notice the Seir, which we're going to find later as well. We'll skip in the next pasuk. Moshe, notice that which you're commanded. Right? So notice you had tziva in one pasuk, the next. But if and you do what you're commanded, then the glory of God will become manifest. Moshe el Aharon, right? He tells him what to do at the end of the pasuk. So you notice this issue of asher tziva, asher tziva, asher tziva keeps coming up over here. The other issue is the various animals, and the other issue is that the glory of God, there will be a Giloy Shechina. V'yikrav Aaron el Mizbeach, he did what he was told, v'yakrivu b'nei Aaron et Adam, like we saw from the very beginning of Vayikra, that's what their job is, skipping over Pasuk Yud, ends up, they did all this, kasher tziva Hashem, et Moshe, as God commanded Moshe. Pasuk Yud Bet, v'yishchat olav, v'yimtziu b'nei Aaron elav et Adam, v'yizukrivu, right, b'nei Aaron did what they were told to do, and we get over here, we're skipping again. Pasuk Tetzayin Vekrevo Tolav, Vyaseo Kamishpat. Everything was done properly. Vayimtsu B'nei Aaron et Adam, Vayizrokehu. Again, they do what they're told. Pasuk of Aleph, Aaron does a tznufa, Hinif Aaron tznufa, Lefnei Hashem, Kasher Tziva Moshe. So you have this constant Kasher Tziva, Kasher Tziva, Kasher Tziva, Kamishpat. After all was done, Vayisa Aaron et Yadav, El Ha'am, Vayivarchem, Vayir Masah, Miasot Tachatat, Volav Ashlamim, Vayob Moshe Va'aron, El Omoid, that's what we were saying before. Then they go into the Omoid, that's what the Midrash asks for what purpose. Vayivarchem Ta'am, Vayirak Vod Hashem, Okol Ha'am. And at this point, the glory of God comes and becomes apparent to everyone, as Moshe said from the beginning. Vatetse Eish Milafnei Hashem, and a fire comes out from God, I'll use the word from heaven, but tochal al mizbeach et olah, and it swallows up, it eats the olah on the mizbeach, et chalavim, vayar kol am, and the people see this, vayaronu v'yaplu al paneim, and they fall, they rejoice and they fall on their faces. Why do they rejoice? Because this, it's operational. Can you imagine you build a whole prototype, and then you push the button, you want to know if the thing is going to work? That's what they did. They built the whole thing, and now they want to know, is this going to work? And what happens? It works. And there is a Gilui Shechina, and a fire comes down from heaven, and it swallows the Allah, and everybody rejoices. They rejoice by the fact that God has now accepted them. Then, what happens immediately next? Source number two happens immediately next. Vechu b'nei Aaron, another of you, ish machtatovit, nubahim eish, v'simolek toret. And they put fire on it themselves. What was the last act that took place? The fire came down from heaven. And they instead seem to be saying, no, we're going to bring the fire. So I want to pause right here and suggest that maybe there is an ideological issue. There is a horrific midrash. It's found in the Gemara. Sorry, it's a Gemara. It's also the midrash. Horrific. It says that Nadav and Aviyu were walking. Moshe was there, and Nadav and Moshe and Aaron in front, and Aviyu in back, and all the Zakenim have. And they said, one of these old guys is going to die already, and we're going to take over. I mean, it's of all the things they're accused of, that's something which is really quite disturbing. But what does that mean? It means that they're saying that Moshe and Aaron represent an old type of leadership, old fashioned. And we need to be perhaps more brazen. We need to be different. We understand the young people better, right? We understand where people are coming from. And this is this needs to be done differently. And therefore I'm saying they are making, not just they didn't talk to Moshe. When I read the Pesukim, they're doing something else. They are rejecting this need for fire to come down from heaven. Because by the way, that's very, very, very difficult to bring fire down from heaven. And instead they bring fire from themselves. And they say, no, we can bring fire. What's God's response? Back in source number two, let's read the pasuk carefully. Right, they put the fire there. Now, the whole time that I've been focusing on the Torah, the problem over here is not the Torah is zara. The problem over here, we were just told, is that the ish is zara. And what does God respond? Which means God sends down a fire and says, no, fire's coming down from heaven, not from you. Which means what I'm saying, keep your eye on the fire and you realize that there may actually be an interesting, not just discussion going on. Of course they didn't talk to Moshe. That's part of the point. That's exactly the point of not talking to Moshe. We're not talking to Moshe because we're a new generation. We understand this generation. And we're not part of this generation that we need to have these magical things taking place. We're going to bring the fire ourselves. And God's response is, no, I kind of like the fire from heaven. Let's try this again. So I'm saying, you can't read the sin of Nadav Aviyu without reading what happened immediately beforehand and without reading what God's response is. And doesn't it, again, I'm leading the witness now, but doesn't it jump out at you now when you say, it doesn't say Tored Zara, it said Esh Zara. They brought an Esh which was wrong. So the fact that they were bringing the Esh, Mia Hedyot, which by the way we're told later on, no, but that actually is the right thing to do, which then completely, once again, confuses us. Now, having said all that, there's something which has been in the back of my mind, and maybe even I've succeeded in getting some of you to think about this as well. But let's now move over to source number 13, which is what I said. We studied a little bit about it before. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Gemara in Yom Daf Nun Gimel. V'natana taktorat ala esh lufnei Hashem. This is talking about how it's supposed to be done by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Shelo yitaken mi bachutz v'yachnis. L'hotzi mi liban shel tzedukim sh'omrim yitaken mi bachutz v'yachnis. My darush, what exactly did they learn? How did they understand it? Ki ba'anan ara ala kaporet. Melamed shitaken mi bachutz v'yachnis. That it says that God is revealed with the anan, with the cloud, and therefore you have to do it outside. I'll explain more in a moment. But it says, you place the ketoret on the fire in front of God. Tanya, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Lo Meitu b'nei Aaron, Ela Ad Shahor Alacha b'nei Moshe Rabban. My Darish Renu b'nei Aaron Akoyin to Eish Amizbeach Afapisha Eish Yeredim in Hashemayim Mitzvah Levim in Hedyo. Now, there's a very interesting continuation over here, but let me go back a second. There is, I think, a well-known argument between the Tzedokim and between the Purushim or the Chachamim. The Tzedokim were of the opinion that the proper way to do the avodah on Yom Kippurim is you... what did the Chumash say? The Chumash said, again, you take the pan, you fill the pan up with the fire, from the coals, you have fire, and on the other hand, you have the ketoret, and then you have to go and make your way through the curtain and get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now, I don't know if this sounded so difficult, but it really requires a little bit of dexterity to have something in one hand, something in the other hand, and then make your way through the curtain. I mean, I could just imagine some Kohen holding the fire, this, touching the curtain, say, oh damn, I just set the base of Migdash on fire. I mean, it's Yom Kippur, I started a fire, whatever. I mean, it's not the easiest thing. So there's an easier way to do it. The easy way to do it is, instead of having things in two hands, you look both ways, no one's looking, you take the Torah, you throw it in with the fire already, and then you go inside, you open up the curtain, and you go inside, and it's a little bit more efficient to do it this way. Now, the first question is the whole motivation of the Tzedukim based upon efficiency, and, I mean, basically where the yek is? Is it the whole thing based upon efficiency and based upon ease of the service? Or is there an ideological position over here? And I'm not really willing to say that the whole thing is based upon ease, although I'm pointing it out that it is a little easier. But those of us who perhaps thought prior to this that the Tzedukim were essentially the same as the Karaites. The Karaites were literalists and took the Chumash without Torah Shebich Baal Peh. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that, and I want to continue, I think that there is a bit of confusion between Tzedukim versus Baitusim. The Baitusim, for example, I do not believe that they believed in Torah Shebichtav either, and I just have to hesitate because we have to trust Chazal. I'm not saying I don't trust Chazal, but we have to trust Chazal in fairly representing what the other side said and assuming that there was no degree of polemic. When it comes to the Baitusim, that's where they defend themselves. Again, their famous position, the Baitusim, is one of Machrat HaShabbat. So how do they defend themselves, Machrat HaShabbat? So it says that there was a Zakein Baitusi who was challenged by Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he says, you know, what are you thinking? You know, where are you getting some from Psukim? I believe last year I tried to show you in the Psukim how the word Shabbat or Shabbaton does not mean Saturday. Because it's true in terms of Emor, in terms of that whole section, you have the first of the month, you have the 10th of the month, you have the 15th of the month, all of them are Shabbaton. You can't have all of them Saturday. It's absolutely impossible. So therefore, we machor Shabbat, pshat, which means a contextual understanding of the word Shabbat or Shabbaton, is not only Saturday. So what pushed them to say this? It's not, again, if you want to say a very myopic You know, just look at one verse, Makor HaShabbat, but it doesn't work if you look at the larger section, and therefore it's indeed not pshat. So what pushed them? Yevokim and Zaka challenged them. So it says that there was a Zokin by Tusi who says, Galui v'yadua shemoshe Rabbeinu oiv Yisrael haya. Everyone knows that Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jews. So what does that have to do with anything? So then he continues and he says, I'll explain it in our terms, Shavuos is a one-day holiday. Sukkot, you ol regel, you come up for 8 days. Pesach, you ol regel, you come up for 7 days. Here is a one-day holiday. So instead of a one-day holiday, he wanted to make a long weekend. So a gesher, which they say in Israel. So he made a long weekend. So therefore, he made sure that every year Shavuos comes out on a Sunday, so you always get a long Shavuos weekend. That was the reason. By the way, notice something, that the whole thinking over here is, how do I get a long weekend? Which is very funny in terms of religious identity. It's a very funny thought. But the other thing, notice who he said. Galui v'yidush Moshe Rabbeinu Oiv Yisrael. He's accusing Moshe of having written this. I mean, Moshe, as far as we're concerned, does not get authorship. Yes, and I'm sure in his resume he can write, you know, Torah Moshe and whatever, but he's not the author. God is the one who dictates this. It's not Moshe's book. So to say that Goli Vidush and Moshe Rabbeinu, say Goli Vidush HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ov Yisrael Haya. But he said Moshe Rabbeinu. So that to me is very, very suspicious. On the other hand, when it comes to the Tzedukim, you don't find that. I think with the Tzedukim is something else. I think Tzedukim believed in Torah Shebichtav. They believed in a very limited Torah Shebaal Peh. When I say limited, they did not believe that we have the ability of making new drashot, which means that we have sort of a continuum over here. You have the Baitusim, who I would put them outside of the line, because they don't believe in Torah Shebichtav either. You have the Tzedukim, who believe in Torah Shebichtav. You have the Chachamim, who believe there's Torah Shebichtav, and there's an ongoing Torah Shebaal Peh. We have the ability of making new drashot and understanding new things. And after, on the other hand, you have the Essenes, and eventually the Christians, who I think are very close to the Essenes, who believe that there's still ongoing prophecy taking place. There's still, one of the things they find by the Dead Sea Scrolls is not just text of Tanakh, which are essentially the same, they find new prophetic works. So remember, Anshei Knesset Agdola already put a limit on the books of Tanakh, because as far as we were concerned, there was no longer any new prophets. So over here, within my continuum, I just now placed the Tzedukim a little bit, they're conservative with the small c, saying that we have no ability of making new drashot. And that puts them aside, where you have then the Chachamim being a little bit more brazen, as or no, where we can still be partners with God and read the Psukim and understand and make drashot and make new applications. So now, if you accept this, and what I'm about to say now may either be mine or maybe my brother Yair's, I don't know. I know that we once discussed it, and I know that I wrote about it, and then I saw that he wrote about it, and each one thinks that it's his. So I'm willing to give him credit. I mean, but I don't remember who actually said this point. But it seems to be that there is an ideological issue over here. And that issue is that the Tzedukim feel a distance from God. I mean, there's too much holiness. We need to cover ourselves up because we can't approach that holiness by ourselves. And therefore, they would see this as an issue of respect. You can't walk into the Kodesh Kodoshim. I don't want to use the word naked, but that's really what I mean. You can't walk into the Kodesh Kodoshim uncovered. You need to first create the cloud, and then you can walk inside. You just can't walk inside by yourself. But the Tzedukim, but the Purushim or the Chachamim who felt, no, we can have relation. No, I can walk inside to the Holy of Holies, and then I need to have the proper respect afterwards. So it could be, this is not just a question of ease or efficiency, it could be that this is a question of ideology. The Gemara in Source 14, I don't know if we need to do this. Maybe we'll do it because it'll also connect something that we saw before. This is, the Mishnah says that we would make the Kohen swear that he'll do it properly. Okay? And the implication of the Mishnah is that there were many Kohanim who did not know how to do it properly, and or ideologically didn't want to do it properly. The Mishnah continues to say that we would learn with them all night so they shouldn't fall asleep. And one of the Chachamim says, and I can attest, the book that I learned many times of them was the Sefer Daniel. So what does that tell you? It tells you the Kohen didn't know Hebrew. Sefer Daniel is written Aramaic. So the fact that he said Daniel, that tells you something about who the Kohen Gadol was, somebody who wasn't even proficient in Hebrew, which is just, you know, sometimes you have to pay attention to the little point. There were high priests during the Second Temple period who did not know Hebrew. That's something which is, that's something which is unbelievable when you understand the implication of the Mishnah. Continue. Gemara. Hu parashu boche shechashaduhu b'tziduki. So the Mishnah says that they would then both cry. The ones who made him swear, and then the one, why? Because they, why would, what, Shechashtu Tzduki, why would he cry? Because they accused him of Tzduki. Behein Poshim Bochim to Amr Bishu Ben Levi, Kol Achol Shebek Sherem, Loke Begufo. V'kol Kach Lama, Shelo Yitakein Nuchutz V'Knes Befnim. Why do we make them swear that they don't do it, prepare it outside, and then go in Kederesh of Tzdukim, Osin, the way that Tzdukim did it? And again, I'm going to say, it could be that even the, that some Kohen maybe thought they would do this just because it's easier, without the ideology. Toner Rabbanon Masib et Stuki Echad Shetikin Mevachutz Veichinus Ofneim. Once a Kohen got the Stuki, got away with it, he did it. B'yitziyato Yasameach Simcha Gdola. When he came out, he was overjoyed. Pogubo Aviv, he bumped into his father. Amalo B'ni, Ava Pishet Stukim Anu. Mithyarmanu Min HaPrushim. Yeah, we're Stukim, but we're afraid of the Prushim. Amalo Kol Yamai. By the way, notice, this is the same speech that Rabbi Akiva gives at least a generation later, because Rabbi Akiva is after the Churban. Kol Yamai Hiyiti Mitzta'er Al Mikra Hazeh Ki Ba'anana Re'er Al Kaporet. Amarti Eimata Yavu Liyodu V'Kemenu. All my life I was worried about this verse, and when will I have, Achshav Shabali Liyodu Lo Yikemenu, now I have the chance, I'm not going to do it. Now you realize Rabbi Akiva's speech, he's echoing the Tzduki, essentially saying, if you're going to be Mekad Hashem Shemayim and die Al Kiddush Hashem, this is not the reason to do it. This is the reason to do it. It says, by the way, it's also interesting. I know we all know that he'll die immediately inside. It's not what the Gemara says. He died a little bit later. And maggots were coming out of his nose. But notice the nose again, going back to what we saw before of Nadav Naviyu, because when you mess up the Ketoret, it goes back to the nose. That's why I wanted to read this. And that's enough for this. Continue. I want to go back to one more thought, because I just want to tie these things together. So part of what I've been thinking about is, so to what extent does Nadav Avihu impact upon the Tzedukim? Which means, are they doing the things the same way as Nadav Avihu? Are they doing the opposite way? And by the way, I don't know if you understand yet what I'm saying, but are these issues related in any way? So let's take a look. Because there's one earlier section that needs to be considered when we look at Nadav Avihu, and this is actually the source for the Gemara that I said before. We're back in Perek Kaf Dalet, which is Parashat Mishpatim. The first part is source 15. V'yikach Moshe chatzi adam v'yisim ba'aganot v'chatzi adam zarak al mizbeach. So over here you have an offering being brought. V'yikach sefer brit v'yikra b'znei ha'am v'yimu kol asher diber Hashem naseh v'nishma. Okay, this is the naseh mishma. This is the conversion process, the Jews becoming Jews. V'yikach Moshe adam v'yisrok el ha'am, and so on. Posuk tet. V'yal Moshe v'aron, Moshe and Aaron, Nadav Avihu, v'shivim zikne Yisrael. All of them go up. When the Gemara says that once it happened, that Moshe and Aaron were going, and Nadav Avihu behind them, and zikne Yisrael behind them, this is the pasuk they're talking about. This is the only time we find that description in the Chumash. V'yir'u et Elohei Yisrael v'tachat raglav kim ma'aseh levnata sapir ke'etza shemayim l'tohar. And they see, well, I don't know how to translate any of the words in that verse. They have some type of an epiphany, and they see God in some way. They have a religious experience. It says, "Vayiru et Elohei Yisrael." They see the God of Israel. The tachat reglav kimaseh levnata sapir ke'etza mishmayim latohar. It's like Yecheskel. They have a religious experience. Posuk Yud Aleph, ve'ela tzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. And God did not strike those noble ones of Israel. And then we're reading, what are you talking about? V'chazu et Elohim. And they looked at God. V'yachlu v'yishtu. And not only did they do that, but they ate and they drank. So over here, the question, of course, who is Atzilei B'nai Israel? The easy answer is Nadav Avihu. If you want, you can throw in and say the Zakenim as well. Because the previous word says they looked at God. And it says now they looked at God. But not only looked at God, they ate and they drank. That's also, I believe, significant. You remember we said before that right after the sin of Nadav Avihu, one of the things they said, oh, they went into the service and they were drunk. Because right after it says to Aaron, don't drink. Oh, look at that. We find their drinking problem goes all the way back to Perek Kaf Dalet. Over here as well, we find them not only eating, we find them eating and drinking. But not only eating and drinking, we find them looking at God. And this, Chazal tell us, to contrast with somebody else who had an epiphany, a religious experience, at the same place, by the way, and that was Moshe at the burning bush. Again, the fire, Moshe at the burning bush, he sees the fire. What does Moshe do? He covers his face, because he can't look at God. And what do? They look at God. So this goes back to what I was saying before, a new generation and a new approach. That Moshe's approach is one of distance, and their approach is one of we're not afraid. We're young and we're brave and we know, right? Every generation who's young knows how to do it better than the old timers who don't understand things all that well. So over here you have Nadav and Avihu who are young, they understand, and we're going to do this right, but right for them is to go and to approach God. And not only they do this, vayachlu vayishtu. Which then leads me to the following thought. Is it possible that the Tzedukim, who we know is being very conservative, is it possible that they're overreacting to Nadav and Avihu? That Nadav and Avihu, they go and try to have this direct relationship with God, and we can look and there's no problem with this, and what the Tzedukim know, this is very dangerous because people can die when they do things like that, and therefore we need to cover ourselves before we even go in. And therefore, again, the issue of Nadav Avihu becomes the issue in understanding this section, but not only that, in even understanding the reaction of how the Tzedukim did this. Let's take a look just how the section ends. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Pasuk Ted Vav. Vayal Moshe El Ahar, Vayichas He'anan Et Ahar. So it's very interesting. You know, it says, on Yom Kippur, you need to create this Anan. We just now found the Anan. The Anan is when Moshe is going to go up into heaven, he's surrounded by the Anan. V'yishkon kavod Hashem har Sinai, v'chaseyo ha'anan sheshet yamim. Right? And then it says that God calls him mitocha Anan. U'marei kavod Hashem ke'esh ochelet, which means the various elements, right, of the Avodah Yom Kippurim with the Anan, and of Nadav Avihu, the Eish Ochelet, all staring at us right over here in this one section, which we now realize. Okay, one more point, and then maybe this will begin to make some sense. The Jewish people came out of Egypt on Pesach. 50 days later, they stand by Har Sinai. When they stand by Har Sinai is where this section takes place right now, what we're reading over here, with Nadav and Avihu already sinning, staring at God, eating and drinking, and they should be struck down at this point. Instead, what happens? God says, well, wait. What happens afterwards? You have the Chet HaEgel. We have the Chet HaEgel 40 days later. At that point, by the way, all the people, or whoever worshipped the golden calf, achlu v'shatu. You notice now that the behavior of Nadav Avihu now becomes the normative behavior for everybody who's worshipping the golden calf. They stand, right? Elul Hech Yisrael, right? We can stare and look at the golden calf, which really then leads you to say, hold it. Is it possible that the sins of Nadav Avihu somehow led to the sin of the golden calf, right? V'achlu v'shatu v'kamal tzachek. So over here, we suddenly get frightened with what happened. And of course, Aaron has a leading position in this. Moshe comes down, right? Moshe comes down right afterwards. People get punished. Aaron, what happened? Moshe prays. Moshe goes back up. Moshe goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul, comes down on Yom Kippur. And what happens on Yom Kippur? Everybody gets forgiven. What else happens? God gives Moshe new luchot, which means Yom Kippur becomes a replacement for when the Torah was given the first time, because now we get new luchot. So now the new luchot, now the question becomes, let's move all the way through, and God says to Moshe, build a Mishkan. They build the Mishkan, and that takes us all the way through the winter. We get up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year, and at this point, Nadav Avihu sin and they die. So essentially, we know exactly where we're up to now. And then we get the instruction, you know what? We need to keep on celebrating Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not a one-time experience. Yom Kippur is not just something that was done in the past one time, which brought about a forgiveness for the Jewish people from having made the golden calf, but it was the completion of receiving of the Torah, which is represented by the Anan and the fire and the experience and so on. There already, as I said, two people sinned, who Nadav and Avihu sinned, by looking and eating and drinking. And now Yom Kippur is being given to us, and along the way Nadav and Avihu did this again, right? They perhaps get drunk again, they do this a second time. And now God strikes them down, and then we're given instructions for Yom Kippur, and something interesting happens at Yom Kippur. What are we told? We're told we can't eat and we can't drink. And as we're reading it, we're thinking to ourselves, oh, so what is this about? And I've always had connected it going back to the sin of the ego, because the achlu v'shatu v'kamul tzachek, and that's why you have Yom Kippur. But now I realize that there's another element over here. The other element is Matan Torah. In Matan Torah, Nadav and Avihu achlu v'shatu. They ate and they drank. And therefore it's possible that what we're doing on Yom Kippur, we are on the one hand trying to fix what Nadav and Avihu did right then, because we realize now the implications of that, and how that may have played itself out even with the sin of the golden calf itself. And The other thing is we need to re-experience Matan Torah, and that's the recreation of this cloud. That's what the Torah is trying to do, to recreate the cloud, but at this time, instead of it being in front of the entire people, it's only in front of the Kohen Gadol. It's only one person can take that time of Kedusha, so you see that we're doing it with a little bit more distance. The Tzduk can go with much more distance, because they need to cover themselves completely in the cloud before you can go in. You need even more distance, but we see over here now, perhaps, again, hopefully, the Avodah of Yom Kippur within a much, much larger context. To quickly look at some people who may have said this, because I know you're always happier with people who are dead have said these things. Source number 16 is the Kli Yakar, who does accuse them of having done this twice. On the top of page 4, we'll skip a little bit. So he over here says, no, they're doing it again. They were drunk again, but this is not the first time they're drunk, and now they're getting punished for the last time, which means God waited. When did he wait? He waited for them to come back and do again the same sin that he did. So there you see, really, the Kli Yakar making this point. And Rabbeinu Bechaye is particularly intriguing in Source 18, where he's explaining the Avoda of Yom Kippur, Ki Ba'anan Erel HaKaporet, and we're going to skip to where it's underlined. A little bit before, v'kohen gadol einu rishai lekanes sham b'shar yamot hashana ki'im b'yom ha-kippurim, u'lefichach yitzarech b'yom ha-kippurim l'ktoret kedei she'yeh lo ksut einayim v'lo yazunu einav miziv ha-kavod. You need to make the cloud so that he should not look at the glory in the Kodesh Kedoshim. V'rezal dorshi ki banan erel ha-kaporet, banan ha-ktoret, b'kan she'yitzarech lasot anan aktor lefnai velefnim lo shetakim mibachutz v'ikanes kedat hatzdukim. Then when you get inside, you need really to cover your eyes and do it not like the tzedukim did it. By the way, along the way, what I would have skipped here is where the very end of Surah 16, three lines from the bottom, the end of 16, top of the page. V'alkein nemar la'aron acharei mot shnei b'nei aron tzivui b'zot yivo aron al kodesh b'yom tzom kippurim yom Anot Adam Nafsho ki az hu ba b'hachna'a lefnei b'rol lo mepnei lev gas. That means the reason he writes, right? The Kli Yakar writes, the reason we fast in Yom Kippur is not to do the sin of Nadav Avihu, who ate and drank by the giving of the Torah. So what we did, in case I confused you all, what we did is, yes, we compared the Tzedukim and the Purushim, and we compared the Tzedukim together with Nadav Avihu. We compared Nadav Avihu with the Kohen Gadol, but we looked at Nadav Avihu both in terms of the sin that happened when they brought an Eish Zarah, and I'm stressing Eish Zarah, but going back to the core of Nadav Avihu's sin, which goes all the way back to Matara, where Achlu V'Shatu, and therefore they looked at God, and therefore there was this complete lack of difference, and they believe that they have this familiarity with it, and they can even create the holiness. It comes from them. They can bring the fire. And as I said, all that is interesting, but it seems to be that God's response is the fire comes from heaven, and there's a place of holy, and there's a place which is not as holy, and there seems to be some confusion within Nadav Avihu in terms of what is proper and not.